So, hello everyone, g'day, and welcome to our latest episode of Kidney Compass, where we navigate the latest developments in kidney disease clinical trials. As you know, this is a podcast where we explore the latest in trials, from therapeutic advances to methodological advances in trial design and analysis. And I'm delighted today to be speaking to two good friends from Denmark, Professor Tor Behring Sørensen and Dr. Christopher Skarup from the University of Copenhagen. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you so much. And great seeing you.
Well, before I just get started, I just have a request for our listeners. We do benefit from word of mouth. And if you do enjoy our podcast, make sure to not only subscribe, but tell your friends, partners, colleagues, fellow postdocs, other people who you interact with, because all of that does help us here at the podcast. So really great to have you guys on the podcast. I know it's getting to summer in Copenhagen. It's probably really beautiful there, so I won't keep you too long today, but really appreciate that you're both here.
Thank you for the invitation, Brandon.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So first off, I'll just say congratulations on this fantastic study called Nudge Flu, which we'll talk about today. And this is a really fantastic example of implementation science in nephrology, something which we talk about a lot, but haven't really addressed in randomized experiments. So Christopher, as the primary investigator and first author for the trial, can you give us a little bit of a summary of the rationale and design for the study?
Sure. So NUDGE-CKD was a nationwide randomized 2x2 vectorial implementation trial where we conducted it last year and presented the results here at the ERA in early June. And we tested simple electronic nudge letters sent to either patients with chronic kidney disease or their general practitioners. And we did it to see if we could increase the use of recommended guideline-directed medical therapies, particularly RAS inhibitors and SGLT2 inhibitors. And the motivation for the trial was that many individuals with CKD, and especially those not followed by specialists, are not receiving or even being offered evidence-based treatments, which has the number of available treatments has increased significantly over the last decade. And we know these can improve both kidney and cardiovascular outcomes. So we sought to see if we can utilize the Danish digital infrastructure to both identify individuals and contact them and inform them with digital letters. And we did that by using our Danish nationwide registries, where we have, which it captures all contacts with the public health system in Denmark, all in and outpatient contacts, and in that way we identified all hospital diagnosed CKD or patients with CKD, and also their general practitioners, and then we separately randomized first the patients to either receive a simple nudge letter or usual care, and the same with their general practitioners. And the participants in the active arm, they received a letter, a one-page letter, which highlighted the value of guideline-directed medical therapy in CKD and informed them that the treatment guidelines had recently been updated and that they may be candidates for new treatment, both as well as previously recommended therapies. And separately, we randomized the general practitioners who had a patient with CKD on the patient list. And that data focused more on summarizing the key therapy recommendations in national guidelines, which are based off the international guidelines. So we ended up randomizing approximately 28,000 patients and 1,500 practices. And while the results were neutral, we still believe the trial have some important insights that we can use to maybe help guide future implementation efforts. And what we saw was that the low-cost digital nudge alone may not be sufficient. And whether that's because there's a gatekeeper who prescribes the prescription compared to what we've seen in some of our other NOTCH trial, which we'll touch on a little bit later. Maybe one of the reasons, it may also because they weren't that personalized or didn't go into explicit therapy recommendations, at least the patient targeted a NOTCH letter. So that's some of the insights, and I guess we'll talk a little bit more about it.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers are incredible. The number of participants randomized and practices randomized in this 2x2 factorial design. Tor, what kind of clinical environment did this study land in? What is the use of SGLT2 inhibitors like in patients with kidney disease in Denmark? And is cost a major barrier to use, or is it subsidized through government programs?
No, that's a great question, Brandon. First of all, the numbers are Christian or Christopher. He has those, and he can give you those the exact numbers. But we don't really have any barriers except the fact that, as Christopher mentioned, that the GPs, the general practitioners, they are the ones who need to being the ones prescribing this. And we have already done NOTCH trials in other scenarios. You actually, probably by mistake, Brandon, said NOTCH flu when you introduced it. That's one of our earlier NOTCH trials where we saw that we could increase vaccine uptake, right? And there, the participants that we randomized, and there we randomized 1 million Danish citizens to different notching letters to see how we potentially can increase vaccine uptake the most. They don't have a barrier, right? They don't need a doctor to prescribe. They just have to show up at the vaccine center. So the thing that we've seen that in notching vaccine uptake, we see huge effects, especially amongst this population with chronic kidney disease, but we don't really see an effect when it's medication we try to notch CKD patients to be prescribed. And the difference in this access to the treatments is, of course, the GP, right? So as Christopher mentioned, this can be one of the limitations or reasons why we didn't see effect, that we need a GP to actively prescribe the drugs that we try to get people to notched to get initiated. And you're right that in our country, you get reimbursed for the drugs, so it's not really a cost issue for as much as other stuff. But you know, learning when doing these NOTCH trials in different scenarios, as discussed, you know, vaccines versus TGMT in CKD in other chronic conditions, is extremely important to figure out how we potentially should design our implementation strategies for the future. But the exact numbers, I know that Christopher, you have those ready to say how many actually were being prescribed the guideline recommended therapies in these CKD patients.
Yeah, I mean in this, and we must keep in mind this is actually quite a selective CKD population. It's only individuals who have had a hospital contact where CKD was diagnosed. It's not all individuals with a eGFR below 60 or a urine albumin above 30. But in this population, the numbers were 26% had picked up a SGLT2 inhibitor prescription in the 6 months prior to baseline. And then 60% for RAS inhibitors.
Okay. Sure. I mean, those data are really interesting in themselves, comparing across other countries at a similar time frame, what the uptake of SGLT2 inhibitors and RAS inhibitors have been. And so that is also really interesting information. So hearing about all the work that you guys have put into designing the nudge and the letter and the consultation with nephrologists and GPs around the country in Denmark. What have you learned about the design of the letter? And if you were going to do a nudge type study again, how would you modify the letter or the intervention, Christopher?
Yeah. So while we involved several patients, both one from the steering committee who was really involved, as well as testing the letter with several outpatient CJD patients. What we learned from after sending out the letters that they may have been too unspecific. They should have been more explicit in what therapies were available, both the previous recommenders as well as the novel ones. We didn't mention any specific treatment names. The goal of the letter was primarily to get them to contact a general practitioner instead of maybe even having, like, if they had the names, they had the treatment, you know, the criteria, lab criteria for when to prescribe SGLT2 inhibitors, when to prescribe RAS inhibitors, that may have facilitated even help perhaps reduce clinical inertia from the general practitioners, or may have had more urgency for the patient to see, okay, I can actually see my previous lab results was actually below this limit. I may be gaining a lot from starting, for instance, an SGLT2 inhibitor. So I think having more specific or explicit letters may have been more effective.
And Tor, I might ask you a little bit more about the pragmatic infrastructure for trials in Denmark and how. I mean, these numbers are incredibly impressive, the numbers of patients randomized. How quickly did you, what was the timeline for this study from conceiving it to enrolling your first patient to completing the trial?
That's yet another great question, Brandon. So just to start with the beginning, the reason why we can do trials like this is, of course, our nationwide registries, where we can identify phenotypes. We can identify, as Christopher mentioned, the patients with a diagnosis code of chronic kidney disease, and identify everyone in the country and potentially invite them through an electronic email system called the eBox system, which is linked to these registries, right? So we can identify everyone with a specific phenotype. For the NOD-CKD trial, it was everyone with a chronic kidney disease, the diagnosis code. And the time course, you know, for designing and executing can be very, very short, because we go into the registries, identify who are now living with this diagnosis code. If we already have designed the letters or decided on what we want to notch, then you can do this, you know, within weeks, right? There are, of course, a lot of other things that has to be put in place. You have to really think about what this potentially can mean for the healthcare system, right? If here it was close to 20,000 CKD patients that we randomized. And when you send out letters or randomize such big numbers, a lot of them will also contact the GP, right? And that will, on a national level, potentially create some logistical issues if all of these patients contact their GPs at the same time when we send out the letters, right? So there's a lot of time that we use to make sure that all parties, all regions in the country, and all nephrology departments were aware, hey, we are doing this trial. And they, of course, were also on board academically in designing the letters that we randomized our patients to, but also on board designing the letters for the GPs. And remember that the GP letters were just trying to take the guidelines, make them easy in a visual way, so they easily could start the patients that they saw in the general practice on guideline-directed medical therapy. And all of this takes some time, you know, just in design. But if you come up with a great idea, Brandon, of a NOD trial you want to execute here in Denmark, then, you know, it's weeks, you know, that we can execute it. Then you, of course, have to wait depending on what outcome. Here it was uptake of prescription drugs that we are waiting half a year before we read out the primary outcome. If we had been effective in increasing or changing the uptake of these very important drugs in this specific population, then we would, of course, also want to follow, does that change in uptake of of guideline-directed therapy translates into downstream lower event rates of kidney important outcomes or heart outcomes. But the execution of the trial can be done in a very, very fast manner because we identify everyone in the country and then it's just sending out letters. And remember here, the intervention is just sending out a letter or not sending out a letter. So that's the time course for notching trials like this. We can leverage this system for a lot of other trials, both doing smaller mechanistic phase two trials where, again, we can identify everyone with a chronic kidney disease in the vicinity of our hospital and invite them to participate in a smaller trial. For example, one that we have done the DECO trial, which we presented at ACC. There we identified people with a chronic kidney disease diagnosis code in the vicinity of our hospital and invited them for a mechanistic phase two type of trial, randomizing them to ACE2 inhibitors or placebo, where we could do that and randomize 220 patients within a one-year time frame from when we actively recruited. And just to compare, DECO trial where we randomized in one center, leveraging the registries, this eBOX system to recruit, took close to 1 year where we actively recruited, versus the fact that the EC Kidney trial that I know that you're aware of, where the numbers that they plan to randomize in the whole country is 150, right? So we could randomize more in one center in 1 year than a conventional executed trial plans to randomize in the whole country using several sites, right? So there are some innovative ways where we can leverage the system that both makes these implementation trials effectively in executing, but also conducting conventionally randomized controlled trials using the conventional methods where we just use it for identification and recruitment, right?
So this is an incredible story. I did not know that DECODE used this same approach method. So for our listeners who aren't aware, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, this was a trial that a mechanistic study that looked at the effect of an SGLT2 inhibitor versus placebo on cardiac structure and function in patients with chronic kidney disease. Is that fair to say?
That's exactly correct. That's the trial setup and the purpose of doing the trial, yeah.
So it's, whilst you've conducted these very large pragmatic nudge trials, you can also leverage the same infrastructure for a more traditional trial, it sounds like.
Exactly, we can use them for just identification and recruitment, boosting the execution of smaller mechanistic trials that are done with completely conventional trial logistics. DECO trial is a completely conventional trial logistic where we saw the patients that we randomized and recruited here physically at our department where me and Christopher is sitting, doing that effectively. But we can also use these systems to do the trials completely decentralized. The NOTCH trials, of course, is part of this the trials in this basket, right, where we randomize people just to letters, they sit at home and then we don't see them at all, but also other intervention trials that we're doing where we do it completely decentralized. Some of them that we at least together have discussed, Brendan, is our vaccine trials, right, where we have in the largest vaccine trials that we've conducted today have individually randomized 332,000 to two different flu vaccines, a high dose versus a standard dose. We already know that the high dose is more efficient. It reduces the risk of getting a positive swab and a flu illness with close to 25%. But no one has designed a trial that is sufficient in size to assess whether an improved flu vaccine translates into lower risk of clinical hospitalization outcomes, right? So that's why we designed this GIGA trial, leveraging the system, inviting 1 million each flu season to participate in our trial, randomizing 332,000 over those three seasons to receive either a high dose or standard dose flu vaccine. And then the outcomes that we assessed was whether this improved flu vaccine lowered the risk of being hospitalized with influenza, not just having influenza disease, but the actual downstream hospitalization meaning that we can assess whether it potentially is cost effective to implement, you know, an improved flu vaccine. And just for to bear in mind that the vaccine trials that are being conducted also with all the new COVID, they are not powered and designed to look at hard outcomes, right? They are powered and designed to assess whether a vaccine lowers the risk of illness with a positive swab, not measuring or not powered to assess whether they lower the risk of COVID hospitalization. So that's the unique thing and why we need to do them even larger.
So you heard it here first, everyone. If you're an oncologist or a rheumatologist, Tor and his team are coming after you too. He's done nephrology, infectious diseases, and moving on to other things. And Tor, you have tested different interventions. There was a recent publication in JAMA. So could you give us some insights into that particular randomized experiment and what you're learning about the nature of implementation science?
Yeah, no, but it's such a fascinating world, right? And it's so easy to test. And I think the experiment that you are referencing to currently is actually in the recruitment process of one of our vaccine trials, where we tested just invitation letter, right? Because in the Ascent trial that Oxford University did many years ago, they saw some interesting results. They tried to test what should the color be of the letter to increase the likelihood of people wanting to participate in their trial. And that was, you know, physical paper letters, right? And as far as I remember, it was the pink letter that they found was, you know, for me, it's so strange that receiving a physical pink letter that increases the likelihood of you wanting to participate. But that was what they saw. So in one of our vaccine trials where we invite, you know, close to 1 million to participate, we randomized the length of the letter, you know, because, you know, Brandon, that in the process of going through the ethical committee approval, they want a lot of stuff to add, right? So sometimes we are not really the people who decide exactly how long the letters could be. But here we try to keep everything on one page versus two pages. And then we also tested different color schemes, you know, to see whether, you know, like they found 20 years ago for the central recruitment process, whether the color also potentially had an effect. And the thing we saw was that the shorter, and it makes sense, the shorter the letter, the greater the likelihood of people that you invite through these systems, the great likelihood of them actually signing up and participating in our trial, right? There was no difference, you know, with the color scheme, but it was purely the fact that you try to keep your information as short as possible. But you're right that I think we don't have time to go through all of the nudging trials that we already have experience from, that we do see that some wording potentially has a greater impact. And I agree with Christopher that our patient letter for the not CKD was probably too unspecific. We should probably just have given a very similar letter to the patients as we provided to the general practitioners, right? Going into details when to potentially prescribe the different drugs, giving the patient more rights over their own treatment and you know, which drugs that they were available were in the patient letter and the not CKD. We just said, new treatments exist, you know, contact your physician and gave the physician the full power, right? So, but it's an intriguing area of doing research. And I think my point of view is just every time you do it big scale, try to embed a randomization because that's the only way that we actually can get causal information of how we should provide our care, how we should execute our trials. So that's what we are trying. We're trying to embed randomization in as much as we can. And the notching trials, of course, one type of it. And also, you know, this randomized experience within the recruitment of a large-scale outcome trial is also an important part of the learning process of doing these large-scale pragmatic trials.
It's fascinating stuff. And, you know, just to go back, I'm also interested in all this, you know, we've spoken a lot today about pragmatic trials, but mentioned also decode and explanatory trials. And of course, it's a spectrum. It's not one or the other. And so if you're using this kind of thinking about using this infrastructure for a more traditional trial, can you send out letters to specific areas that are for example, if only some hospitals in Copenhagen are participating in a trial, you can focus on sending the letters to specific patients who attend that hospital?
Yes, yes, that's definitely, that's exactly what we did in Decode, right? You're completely right, but it's not black white. It's not, you know, pragmatic or completely conventional, or, you know, it's a spectrum, and we do all of them. We also do multinational randomized controlled trial where we are just one site where we try to leverage these systems to boost recruitment. Everything has to go through, of course, the approval processes, right? And it has to be approved. And it's probably harder when it's an industry sponsor than when we are sponsored and it's our academic institution that leads the trial. But yes, you know, we are doing completely conventional executed industry-sponsored, multinationally run randomized controlled trials, where we also leverage these systems to try to boost recruitment. And, you know, you can also argue that it's unethically, right? The reason why we see, you know, the very selective study participants in many of these large-scale, multinational, industry-sponsored outcome trials is because it's the university clinics, it's the academic clinics that see patients that actually recruit, right? And that's the only patients that get the offer to participate in these trials, where they give it opportunity to get a drug that actually potentially can improve their illness, right? Here, at least, we identify everyone in the country, right? Everyone gets the offer. So it's you know, my point of view is that it's the more ethically right way to do trials, instead of doing only invite and potentially include those who are being followed at the academic institutions, that now we get the opportunity to everyone in the country, to whoever specific phenotype, actually to participate in these trials where they get a potentially new improved treatment.
That's a really interesting point about the equity perspective, isn't it? So I think that hasn't really been part of the discussion to a greater extent, but you raise a very good point about equity and access to clinical trials.
Yeah, and when you do these trials in these systems, the unique thing, when we identify people in the registries, we send out invites, we randomize, then we can also assess this diversity, you know, our trial population with everyone else that could have participated. And we do see this, that even when we invite everyone in the country with a specific phenotype, we do see that it's the most health-seeking, it's the healthy volunteer that actually participate in randomized trials. But at least we can quantify it, right? And we can also see that we, at least when compared to the conventional vaccine trials, now it's mainly in the vaccine scope when we have done these comparisons, we see that there is a smaller gap between the, you know, the healthy volunteer effect than what we see in conventional trials. So we can assess the generalizability in a very easy way and assess, you know, the similarities and where we might lose the most sociodemographic disadvantaged populations, so we get a much better sense of this issue, and it is an issue that we as trialists need to fight against, right? And I think this way of inviting and identifying in these nationwide types of registries that exist in many countries, also in Australia, you know, is really also an opportunity to reduce that gap of only seeing the high social class and those who are highest most health seeking in our trials.
Yeah, really fantastic points and great perspectives. So, I just in the interest of time, I'll ask you one more question, which is just to say you've mentioned your current GIGA trial looking at influenza doses and clinical outcomes across Denmark. But you do a whole breadth of work looking at cardiac imaging, kidney disease, heart failure. What's exciting you both at the moment, and what's next for your group in Copenhagen?
No, I think maybe if Christopher, you can start.
Well, yeah. So relevant for what we just talked about. We are using this system now for our first ever trial, where we'll test continuous trial treatments, where we'll in a decentralized setup test several nutritional supplements in heart failure patients, where we need which cannot just be done in a regular exploratory trial setup like from only our hospital. We need to reach all heart failure patients in Denmark. So we will use the nationwide registries to identify individuals with heart failure. We'll recruit them through the digital eBud system, and we'll mail out what's called treatment packages to all individuals who opt in to participate. And we'll do that in a completely decentralized setup. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Yeah,
fantastic.
No, and I agree that it's, you know, the neutral heart failure trial that Christopher is mentioning, that's exactly testing this concept of sending out continuous tablets, right? You know, instead of a vaccine, pragmatic trial is easy because it's one hit and then you just follow them, right? But we are continuously trying to learn and also push the boundaries for what is possible within these systems, and we of course want to do any kind of trials, you know, phase 2, phase 3, phase 4, you know, implementation trials as well. And I think where we are really seeing an effort now is to actually, as you also touch upon, Brendan, is you know, doing phase 3 trials leveraging this system, not only, you know, using it for recruitment like we already discussed in multinational phase 3 trials where it's a new drug that is not approved, but also trying to design these trials so they're so decentralized, where you get all the information, we randomize in the neutral kind of way, as Christopher mentioned, for our heart failure trial, but doing phase 3 trials completely decentralized, you know, mailing stuff, the treatments that we're testing to them at home, and getting patient-reported outcomes through apps, home tests. That is the new frontier and what we will try to move towards. But we're learning on the process, and then Nutro is a great example of setting up the infrastructure before, you know, proposing to do a phase 3 trial leveraging these systems. So yeah, that's hopefully next year we can do a new podcast when the first phase 3 trial leveraging the system has been initiated, Brandon.
Well, thank you so much, Tor and Christopher. So that's a wrap on this latest episode of Kidney Compass. Amazing to have, you know, these world-class insights from Copenhagen and these large-scale pragmatic trials being discussed. If you want to find out more information, please contact me, Shika, or Tor. You can reach us through the usual social media channels. And if you've got any feedback on content you'd like covered on the podcast, please also get in touch. So thanks everyone again for tuning in, and we look forward to speaking with you again soon. Thanks very much.